But she's a lot more disciplined in her approach to science, and she follows this. She's not fragmented in the very least, and she follows specific aims to the T. And you know, I don't. She's had a good measure of success, but she was had a funding lapse there a couple years ago, and struggled a little bit, like everybody else. And I'm sure that I'm not. You know, there's a threat that I will have that too. Of course, now she's so she's been a faculty member longer than I am because she came in 87 at the same time I did as an assistant professor, and so she's an associate professor now. So she's had funding, not all that time, but I guess been exposed to a potential lapse in funding longer than I have. I haven't had the exposure. But I, you know, I on the other hand, admire her a lot. In fact, you know, you could almost say that she's one of my role models because she's really very, she epitomizes some of the qualities that I'm lacking, and know that if I don't, you know, shape up a little bit, then follow her lead, then I may have some real problems. So it's good to have her her image to look at, to emulate. There's a couple other good ones too. We have some good role models in for me in this department, really. So, but we don't talk much about science. We have lab meetings together. Our labs have Wednesday noontime works in progress meetings, and that's all science. And that really is enough exchange of information. So. Once again, most of it comes from, so we're not working on the same projects at all. So she studies Niemann-Pick disease, which is a problem in cholesterol transport. And then I study this modified base and transfer RNA, which is not related at all to cholesterol. And then this other genetic disease, which is not related to cholesterol metabolism either. So there's not like that we can do common experiments. But we can still understand and be helpful in criticism, critically evaluating positively and negatively each other's labs experiments. But still, because I have this long history in cholesterol metabolism, then I can be more informative or more helpful just in drawing upon past knowledge to the experiments that she's doing and the ideas that her work is putting forth or the directions it's telling her to go in than she can in mine. Because she doesn't know anything about she doesn't know as much about neurodegeneration or isoprenetine adenosine as I know about cholesterol metabolism. So, I mean, I think that helps both of us. It gives her an extra expert, so to speak, and then it helps to keep me into something that I've always been very close to. And, kind of watch that field. Mm-hmm. That's stimulating.
Well, given your two schedules, you know, when do you find time to, like, see each other and get the laundry done and do grocery shopping and divide the
It's not that difficult. I mean, we don't do anything else. Well, that sounds pretty bad. But, you know, really, if you don't have children, then that opens up an incredible block of time. I mean, I don't understand how anybody can carry on the professional work that I'm attempting to do with a family, even with a supportive wife. And then, you know, there's that building's full of those guys like that and women like that. I just don't see how they can do it. It's just impossible. But I guess they're probably better disciplined. You know, or whatever. So, but it's just not difficult to do the, you know, to do the wash on the weekends. Just make sure you have enough clothes to go the whole week. And now it does get a little harried. So, and she has other. So I, you know, I futz around. She plays a little golf, but so I futz around with golf in the fall. Then I get pretty busy at football season. That's pretty demanding. I have meetings 2 days a week, and then. I oftentimes have to travel on the weekends to go to a game site. So for those 10 weeks right there, then it's like an extra job. So she doesn't do that, but she has other activities, gardening and bird watching and the like, to reading. She reads a lot more than I do. Embarrassingly, I don't read much outside of Journal JVC or Selden, other than the Sunday paper. But she does do some pleasure reading. So, like I said, it's not difficult just to keep up with day-to-day activities if you don't have anything else besides work. And we fall into that category.
Well, I was going to ask if then, you know, the way, you know, in order to be productive and successful and creative and everything else, does science now select against people who want to have children and a lot of responsibilities outside the household? But then again, you know, your life seems to be fairly interesting outside the lab, mm-hmm. as well, by officiating, by golfing with the Tufts policeman that I met this afternoon. You know, and so it still seems to me that you must have to do a pretty good job of managing your time. And, you know, how you are unorthodox in your kind of approaches and your own career path to getting to be a PI. And, you know, how do you see, you know, the pressures creating the scientists? How can, you know, scientists balance all of this? And does science require a certain type of individual to be successful?
I don't think so, because scientists have always had to balance this kind of stuff, you know, families and profession, and done a good job of it. I mean, I don't know what percent of Nobel Prize winners were married and had families, but I've got a feeling that it probably hasn't changed much in the past, say, 10 years versus the preceding 20, or even time before that. So there are people who, I don't think there's a selection process going on to say that better scientists are ones that don't have other responsibilities away from the lab. And I think that good scientists are coming about and can handle these other responsibilities. Some people, probably myself included, could not do a very good job of that. You know, I've never had children. If I had children at the time I was working in Joe and Mike's lab, then I probably wouldn't have been as successful and as productive as I would have. You know, I wouldn't have worked as much. Clearly, or somebody would have suffered, either them, me, or my kids. But I don't think that's true for everybody. I think Laura could probably be just as successful with the family. She would just adapt. I think this was one of the first things we talked about. But what is a concern to me is that perhaps in the process of adapting, say, this couple, this scientific couple that's got kids, that they don't have the time or the opportunity to have meaningful interactions with the rest of the public. So that kind of alienates them, and alienates our profession from the rest of the public. Now, you know, if you're working, you know, 50 or 60 hours a week in a lab and raising a family, you're not going to officiate football games, or you're not going to spend a whole lot of time being an active member in the Massachusetts Audubon Society. And I mean active. We're not just going out and looking at birds by yourself, but organizing field trips and leading field trips and meeting with members and the like, which is meeting the public. Or in my case, it's, you know, being a football official and going to meetings twice a week with 100 other professional men at all walks of life and working towards a common goal, and them seeing me there and I'm seeing them there, and sharing a little bit about what each one of us does. And knowing what, you know, what their lives are like, I think kind of helps bring us together. I call it sort of like the Kiwanis Club, you know, or the Lions, you know. But if you, so if you've got a family, and then you, but and yet, and then you at the same time have to be competitive in our profession, and our in grant funding or in biotechnology or whatever, then I just don't think there's enough time to do this other part, to be accessible and interact with the public. And so that's going to suffer. Obviously, it's the least, it's a low thing on the totem pole compared to family and job. So that's a concern. And so I guess we're able to keep that up. I'd like to, you know, do more of it.
Well, how committed are you to maintaining this public life?
Well, I'm very much committed to it. Because it does give us an opportunity, or give me an opportunity, to see, you know, the diversity in life, in people. So just the act of, so scientists themselves are a selected subset of society. I mean, you've got to have certain traits, just like athletes are a selected subset. They're usually stronger, faster, taller. You know, you don't see any fat athletes. Librarians are, or let's don't say librarians. So scientists are probably, by and large, let's say, smarter than truck drivers. They probably prefer to work inside than outside. They may be a little bit more imaginative than other. So it's a selected subset of the population. So you don't have the exposure to people who like to be outdoors, are people who may be more keen on mathematics and have intuitive sense. And that's kind of limits the potential in experiencing diversity in the populations, you know. You just don't, we don't have that exposure. So by, it's important to try to keep that exposure level high, just so we have a, you know, we have a broad sense of what's going on in society, apart from our little selective niche, that being science. You go to meetings. I mean, you don't go to political conventions. We go to scientific meetings. You know, everybody is a scientist. Everybody works full time at being a scientist. It's not like the Kiwanis Club, National Kiwanis Meeting or Lions Meeting or something like that, in which there's people that work full-time at something else.
Okay, well, you know, I could continue to ask questions all afternoon, and we're now at kind of our time limit. And at this point, I want to turn it over to you and ask, you know, is there anything you want to add that we haven't talked about?
You know, I should have realized that question was coming up, and you know, and had to.
It's on the outline.
It is. It is. Oh my word.
No, I'm just teasing you.
It could have been.
It is on the outline. It's the last thing.
I didn't get the.
We don't give tests.
I know, but I read it. You know, I was better prepared the first day, but then when you said the second day that sometimes spontaneity was okay, I didn't prepare last night. But let me just think a minute on this. Because, I mean, I'd like to think that I had something important to say, because this whole process, not only this interview process, but the whole association with the Pew Charitable Trust has been very important to me. And, but I guess that doesn't really have any bearing on this, does it? Ah. Wait a minute, something's germinating.
Okay, this is your interview.
You can say what you want.
So I,
I'm disappointed that I had forgotten this.
Well, do you want to pause the tape, walk around a little bit?
No, no. I'm just disappointed that I had forgotten it until right now, and I'm certainly glad I remembered, because it's really the most important feeling that I have about it. My whole experience is in my professional career. And so that is that I am really and truly amazed how very, very fortunate I've been. I don't think that I know of anybody that could have the luck that I've benefited from. To be able to more or less come from humble beginnings and with not a lot of much preparatory experiences, and to have the opportunity, to have the opportunities to be a part of and to witness the, you know, the development of and the growth that was with Brown and Goldstein, and to learn from that environment, that once again gave me more opportunities to go to graduate school, more opportunities to work at DuPont, and then continued good luck and good fortune to come to Tufts, and to have smooth transitions as a graduate student, and be able to get a wonderful position with another smooth transition to a faculty appointment. That's just, when you stop and think about it, to have this continually going on now for almost 30 years is amazing. And, you know, it's hard to think that I've done anything to deserve this. I know I haven't done anything to deserve this, except I've always worked hard, because I knew that's the only thing that's what I felt like I could do the best at, was as long as I continued to put the time in and to think about what I was doing and just apply the things that I'd learned, that I could, you know, still continue to improve. But just the opportunities that I've had, that so few other people have had, it is really awesome. And it's difficult to ever see repaying some of that. And not that I'm even going to try, but so I'm just thankful that I remembered how grateful I am, and hope that I'm not losing that feeling to the point of even coming anywhere close to being ingrateful, because it's important to me to always remember, you know, what people have done for me and what opportunities have come about as a result of just fortunate luck.
Okay. Well, I have been very fortunate to interview you, and I thank you very much.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Andrea.